What are y'all doing here? Look at that. He should be like frolicking by the pool.
Did you just get in today?
Last night.
Okay, so you brought the good weather. It had been raining until Michelle Yeoh arrived. You have been to Cannes before, though. How does it feel to be back?
It's always great to be in Cannes because it's got such a good atmosphere and we all come for the movies that we love, mm-hmm. right? So Cannes is a really, really wonderful place for that. And it's had such good history. And you know, people who really love films are here to not just celebrate the difference, but to celebrate each other mm-hmm. and hopefully make a good sale.
That too.
That's very important.
Do you have a favorite memory from over the years at the festival?
Oh, I must say then it has to be the very first memory when I came with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Mm-hmm. And that is like 23 years ago. Yeah, literally 23 years ago, we had our first big premiere. And you know, Cannes is a great place, but it can also be very brutal. If they don't like your film, they tell you right away. But we were very blessed from the first press screening, and 8 o'clock for a screening is tough for any movies and tough for a foreign film, subtitles. But our producer, Bill Kong, came up to us very excited and said, "You guys had a standing ovation in the middle of the movie after the first action sequence where I'm running on the rooftops, that fight sequence." And he says, very rarely it happens here before. And we thought, we're doing promotion. You don't have to, you know, make it nice for us. But we were so happy with the reaction of the people. So I think that must be, until today, my best memory of Cannes, mm-hmm. my first introduction.
Now, congratulations. You've had quite the year. I'm sure you're exhausted, first of all. It feels like Michelle Yeoh was everywhere.
Everything at all at once.
Yeah, thank you. No pun intended, but you brought me right into that. So for your role in Everything Everywhere All at Once, you won the Oscar for Best Actress. You made history,
yes,
becoming the first Asian woman and only the second woman of color to win that award. Mm-hmm. First of all, before we get into these history-making moments, have you taken it all in yet?
Honestly, no. I think it's because we were working, promoting the film since a year before the Oscars. So it's been a long journey. When I don't think any distributor really puts the movie out if they thought it was an Oscar contender. But Everything Everywhere All at Once became such a people's movie. And very quickly, even filmmakers themselves recognized this is the language of the future for films. And we always ask for originality, we ask for difference, we ask for inclusivity, diversity, you know, all these adjectives. And Everything Everywhere All at Once really gave it to us. It's a very blessed movie from the word go. We finished shooting right on the day of lockdown. Can you imagine an independent film, if you have 2 or 3 weeks left, chances are you'll never finish the film. How are you going to get everybody back? Because only money can buy time, especially in our industry. And then we, Paul, our editor, and this is also due to A24, who didn't say, just get the movie out, right? We've already shot it, get the movie out, we'll sell it to a good streaming platform and everybody will get to see it during the COVID lockdown. They held on to it, which gave us the directors, the Daniels, and Paul, our editor, 2 years to work on this, on the finished product. And it is a very complicated. If you see our script, you will understand how complicated it really is. And I remember meeting Paul's wife for the first time in South by Southwest, the festival there. And she said, "You've been living with me for 2 years." And
thank you.
So it really gave us And when that happened, South by Southwest was probably one of the first festivals that was real. It no longer was a virtual one. And for all of us who love movies, it takes away so much when you're doing it virtually. It's a shared experience, and that's why we make movies. We have to share that experience in the cinema. We laugh together. We cry together. We go on this insane roller coaster ride. And I think with everything, helped you bear your souls because you were there together. You hear people laughing and you go like, it's okay to laugh out loud. It's okay to cry. And it's how the message stayed on with people. I think that meant the most to me.
And to your point, the film, it exceeded expectations at the box office. It did incredibly well, particularly for an independent film. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that movie is now going to make a change in the industry? Because right now what we are seeing is studios, they're not taking many risks. The films that do well are these big franchise films and superhero films, and that is what is bringing people to theaters. But of course, we're in this age where post-pandemic, there's so much streaming and people watch on their couches. So do you think that Everything Everywhere All at Once will convince the people in charge to take risks on new ideas?
I don't think cinema will ever be replaced. You know, it's a whole different way of watching. And for before the time began, we all need to come together to do things together. And cinema is one of the best ways where we can agree to disagree, like or not like the same movies, but we come together and celebrate or criticize or whatever, but we come together. And it's a beautiful language. But it's the difference, I think, now is there's so many things to choose from. As filmmakers, yes, maybe it is a good thing because we have more platforms. And when you do a small indie film, the chances of you being able to be released in a cinema, a theatrical release, is very minor. It's very little. Has Everything Everywhere All at Once changed it? I don't think so. But has it put the light on indie films? Every time a good indie film does well, the light is on. We're always looking for the next best indie film. And you can see there are so many indie films out there. When you walk down the Croisette and you see what's on show, you know that it's because there are filmmakers, really, really good filmmakers who want your work to be seen. And when you're a new filmmaker, nobody's going to give you $100 million, let alone $50 million, let alone $10 million, right? But then that is the time when we are the most creative. Because we need that. If you look at Everything Everywhere All at Once, it was made for less than 15 million. 1-5, not 5-0, okay? But it's, just think, all right, the simplest thing. We created the easiest, cheapest, multiverse traveling, right? No CGI. All it was the old, you know, phone head thing and going, we're in another universe. Right? So you have to be creative. And I think that's when we do really a lot of our best work, because that's when you're really, really passionate. And you also don't have the studio executives overlooking your shoulders, because if they give you a big budget, it's also their responsibility to make sure you deliver what they think should be the right thing. And that takes away, that's what we fight for all the time, that creativity, that, you know, how do you maintain your integrity in that way? It's not about selling short. Of course, with bigger budgets, you can attain a lot more things, better storytelling and all that. I mean, just don't waste it on trailers and, you know, I don't know what, some of the things that you see. But as we go, we have to encourage, we have to support each other. I think one thing I learned very much from this whole process, because I've been in this industry long enough to know that we fight for women continuously, we fight for equality, we fight for diversity, we keep fighting for, but it also has to come from the top. If it doesn't come from the top, it's very hard to trickle down to the bottom. But now in this, especially in the last few years, you can see women are speaking out a lot more for themselves. In the past, I find that women are very critical of themselves, right? Men are not. Men are always like, I'm so good. And women is like, how do I get better at this? You know, we nitpick at maybe our good things even. So I see a great change in that. And I find sometimes women have a lot more issues that they are trying to deal with. Are they two women if they don't have family? You know, then the clock is ticking. Oh, if I pay too much attention on my work, and then how am I? I hate it when they say it's a geriatric, what the hell? If you're pregnant over 30, it's like, it's terrible when all these things, all this kind of unnecessary pressure are put on us, you know? And sometimes it does drive very good storytellers who are women, whether it's in front of the camera or behind the camera, because they feel that they have to make that choice at the beginning. So kudos to all those women who are amazing at what they do and have children and have a happy family.
Can you speak a bit more about that change that comes from up top that you mentioned in your time in this industry? What has been the biggest change that you've seen in the past few years?
Diversity, really. I think it started with Crazy Rich Asians. We sort of lit the fire, a small little fire. And I remember at that time, if the producers, the studio did not think that this, because it was true. The last all-Asian cast was 26 years ago, which was Joy Luck Club, right? And since then, there hasn't been, I mean, I'm not talking about foreign films where, you know, like Parasite and all Japanese films, Korean films, Chinese films. I'm talking about a homegrown American movie. And a lot of the times, what I don't understand is like, why are we minorities? What is that word even? Why should it even exist? And then with that, luckily, what if Crazy Rich Asians was not a success? Would it have set us back another 25 years? So there was a lot riding. And fortunately, John Chu, Nina John Panotti, they did a brilliant job with the marketing, with how the story was told, how it was not just separate, but included. You know, Americans, people who are not Americans, who have people living in it. You have so many children who go to school in America. So it's about time that they share this understanding of the cultures. So we were lucky with that happening. It suddenly opened. It was, actually, the studios were going, they do like to see an all-Asian cast. And it made it a lot more easier. Because what I find the best thing that has happened is I receive a script that doesn't describe the character as a Chinese or Asian looking person. We are actors. We are supposed to act. We are supposed to be able to step into roles that are given to us and do our job as best as we can. So that for me has been the biggest step forward. But from then, of course, Shang-Chi, we had our first Marvel Chinese superhero. And that opened the door even wider. And with Everything Everywhere All at Once, all I can say is we just kung fu the hell out of that glass ceiling. Because we took it, you know, we broke the boundaries. We broke the walls down and you say, when you say why, we say, why not? Right? If you don't do it, then you're waiting for someone else to do it. That's a cop out. Right? We should be standing up. If you truly believe that is how it should work, why are you not up in front doing the work, walking the talk?
So let's say that Crazy Rich Asians hadn't done well.
I wouldn't be sitting here today, I guess.
But what do you think would have happened? And where is that double standard where, you know, we hear so often that a white man directs a film and it's $100 million and it flops and then they're handed another $100 million budget? Would that have happened if Crazy Rich Asians?
You know, you are absolutely right. There are mega films that suffer terrible losses, yet they still go and keep doing the same thing, and they don't stop. But it's also the studios thinking that that's their comfort zone, right? Okay. So these movies, the budgets get bigger because they feel the more violence, the more CG, the more of that will make it better. Uh-huh. But in the truth of the matter, it's not. It's really storytelling. Mm-hmm. And in Everything Everywhere All at Once, even though we traveled the multiverses, what was the main thing? The main theme was love. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the first movie where I fought with love. It was like, and I swear, the first time I was like, huh? What do you mean fight with love? It was like, come to this goes against all nature of fighting, right? So it's how we tell the story. And this is the perfect time. We've been through the worst few years of our planet. And now when we have a chance to do something different, are we going back to the old ways? Are we happy to step back? You know, when we all stopped, when everybody got off that wheel, we all stopped because everybody stopped. We don't stop because if nobody stops, we are afraid to stop because you think you'll be left behind or someone will overtake you. And that's a lot of pressure to have constantly. But once everybody stopped, that was when we all stopped. We went, actually, this is good for me. We reflected. Now we're back out But it looks like a lot of us are jumping back on that wheel, and we have to make the changes. We have to remember that we need to make the changes. And we had a huge reset. So let's use that reset wisely, you know, and step up. And I say that because we all want a better world, not just for us, but for the our kids and their kids and more to come. But if we go back into old habits, then things are not going to change. And I think all of us who have a voice or think we don't have a voice, actually we do. And we all have that superpower to be able to use it. And so I just urge everyone, speak up, right? You don't have to speak for violence or you speak to fight in that way, but you have to speak and to be heard. And I think what Everything Everywhere All at Once did, especially for the younger generation, was they felt they were heard. Because if you think about it, our generation or the previous generation, they never really traveled the world, right? But this generation, they're seconds away. They don't like this. Well, I'm going to next country. I'm going here. I'm going there. So their minds are so broad and wide. And yes, it is very hard for them when, you know, mothers, aunties or grandmothers, when they tell you what to do. And their concept is like, you can't even handle your phone. Stop telling me how to lead my life, right? It's the communication. And I think our world will be a better place if we communicate it. If we learn to listen, just stop and listen as well. So
I want to read a piece of your Oscars acceptance.
Oh, God.
It got so much attention, and it was a standout moment of the Oscars because it was so powerful. So you said, I believe that times are changing. There is much more inclusivity. There is more diversity. Look at me. I've been in this business for 40 years, and I finally get to be number one on the call sheet. So there's this phrase, it takes a long time to become an overnight success. And you mentioned 40 years that it finally took for you to get to that moment. I think a lot of people, and certainly a lot of critics in the world in which I exist, a lot of journalists were saying, Michelle Yeoh should have been nominated a gazillion times before this. And a lot of people thought that you should have been nominated for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. That would have been in 2001 for those Oscars. Do you think at that time that the industry was not ready to recognize an Asian woman at that time?
I think it's quite obvious, right? You just answered yourself. It is true. I mean, if you think about it, there were so many great Asian Chinese movies that came out at that time. From Ang Lee, from Zhang Yimou, from Chiang Kai-shek, I mean, Gong Li, or, you know, there are many, many Joan Chang, beautiful Chinese actresses that came before me who should have been. But if you look also at all the films, they get nominated here in Cannes, they get awards, but very rarely, especially in the Oscars, never. That's why I'm the first Asian nominated. They would nominate best director, best film, best this, best everything. And you wonder, how come the actors don't get involved, right? How do you get there without the actors? So it seems a little odd. But is it because of that? I think so. I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? I'd hate to like rub that in their noses. Just say, let's move on. Let's move forward, because the time is now that we keep moving forwards. And what I love now, there are more opportunities. There are storytellers. There are great stories to be told. And we don't have to be the only ones that tell our stories. The movie business is that we tell each other's stories. Is that how do you share it? How do you make that bridge? How do you make our stories come to life? And irregardless, you know, that's the beauty about a great movie. It transcends culture. It transcends time. It transcends languages. When Crouching Tiger came out, people were saying, like, nobody in America will watch this film because they don't know how to read subtitles. Like, guess what? Americans do know how to read. So it's just a matter of pushing the envelope and refuse to say, well, this is the normal way. Yes, in the normal way, would Everything Everywhere All at Once, would it have been nominated? Chances are no. If you are talking about 5-10 years ago, this movie would be like, it's comedy, it's science fiction, it's got kung fu, it doesn't fit the box. But now it seems like everybody is revamping the way they look, revamping the way they think, and also they're inviting all newer members, you know, visionaries. people who think differently. And that's the only way we can make our industry improve. It's to be a visionary, it's to do things differently. Otherwise, we get stuck in the same box doing the same things over and over again. And then we ask ourselves why, how come there's nothing interesting out there?
And to drive that obvious point home, the year after that, 2002, is when Halle Berry won. And it took until 2023 for you to become the second woman of color to win. So it shows, you know, one step forward, one step back. But I wanted to ask about the Oscar win. There's been a discussion of what an Oscar win does for a career. Have you noticed any change? I know it hasn't been that long. It might be too soon to notice. But have you noticed any change? And what would your hopes be in terms of pay, in terms of being able to negotiate better for yourself, in terms of choosing roles?
Hell yes.
Yeah.
Well, I have some of my team over sitting out here, and they can tell it is. Because I think the most important thing is, first of all, it has generated such pride with our people. The day that I won, I honestly heard the roar of joy that came from that corner of the world to be recognized, to be seen, to be heard. It has, I think it's been slowly moving in that particular way. And this has just pushed the door open and say, we're not going anywhere else. And this door is not shutting behind me. Because what I feel this has done is not just for me, but me being able to bring other people in as well. Because we always, I think in the past when there were so few roles, it was so competitive. And I can understand why, you know, it's like, if you get the job, that means I don't have the job. Because it's either you or me. But now what we have to change the mindset is, if I'm successful, you're going to be successful. And together, we can make big success out of this and create more roles. I won't be playing the mother over and over again. I've created a role like this, and I hope someone else will be able to do a different take, a better take on it. Then we have, there's not only one mother in the world, right? There are so many out there, and there's so many stories that needs to be told from a mother's point of view. And it can come from so many beautiful actresses out there. So I think this is what we need to do, is to have that mindset. It's like, movies are the best thing in the world for collaboration. You cannot do it alone. So we have to collaborate on all the different levels, on, you know, working together as how do we make roles for each other, make space. The space cannot be this. We will use if our elbows, our knees, or whatever it is to create that space where it will be lucrative for everyone. It will be enjoyable. It will be sustainable. You know, all these like big good words that will come out of it. And I think that is the future. That is what we have to aspire to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your Oscar speech, you also said, ladies, you are never past your prime.
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
Exactly what I mean. It's like, you know, there's too many, because I remember that I think there was one journalist who really put his foot in his and said, you know, when you are 30 or 40, you're past your prime. And he actually tried to say, oh, but it comes from Google or something like this. It's like, do we have to live our life through what somebody else decides? No, right? So that's exactly what I meant. It's because I feel that it's so important, and especially the last year. Because once your numbers get bigger, it's very easy for things to sort of like shrink. And there are less roles. And I was always very frustrated. Why do the guys in their 60s or 70s or 80s get to go out for these like big adventures and rescue and probably go on the adventure with my daughter while I have to stay at home by the phone? It's like, no. So it's fighting for these kind of opportunities is why can't we do it? Mothers are just as fierce, if not more. And I think with Everything Everywhere All at Once, it proved a point. It proved that the audience wants it as well. The audience, and hello, we make up half the population of the world, correct? So, yes.
So I do want to ask, since we've talked a lot about Everything Everywhere All at Once, when is the sequel coming?
There's no sequel.
There's no sequel.
No. It's, you know, it's one of those movies where it's, we would be just doing the same thing. We already fought the biggest enemy, which is sometimes ourselves, right? Within ourselves. And we brought out the message, it's how we're going to do it, and reminded everyone, every one of you is a superhero, because we all inherently have the superpower of love, compassion, and kindness. And we can, you know, we don't need a cape to be a superhero. We can do it every day, anytime we choose to. So, no.
Okay.
Other things.
And how about Crazy Rich Asians? There was a lot of conversation about a few sequels, and we haven't heard anything in a while.
I don't know. That is, they have been talking about it. And I think sometimes it's hard, you know, when you've got such a big success and you go, how do I better it? And that's the biggest chip on the shoulder. It's like, do I make it better, bigger, this, that?
Mm-hmm.
I think they are trying to find the right story.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, Kevin Kwan is endless with his stories. Yeah. So we will see other things.
Yeah. Now, we're almost out of time, but I do want to ask, you have a very exciting upcoming role in Wicked. And I recently saw some comments from you that you said that it was a risk for you. It's your first musical. So how did this role come to you and what was your first reaction?
Oh, God. You know, when we were doing publicity and, you know, often people will ask, what is the universe? What would you love to be? And it's funny. Both Jamie and I said the same thing. We want to be a rock star, you know, in a universe where we're like, we're not that rock star, okay? And I would love to sing. I would love to perform. And then when we were doing I was filming a haunting in Venice, in London.
Mm-hmm.
So I get this. No, I was doing press in LA. Then I get a call from John Chu. She said, Michelle. And I love John Chu.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, will you do me a favor? Can you read the script? I really, really would like you to see if you would do this. So I read it. And I called him, John, you realize it's a musical, right? He goes, yeah. I said, I don't sing, you know that, right? He goes, yeah, don't worry. So here I am, my first musical.
Well, we are very excited to see it.
So am I.
And have you wrapped production?
Oh, I just came from London last night.
You did?
So we're in the final 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We have a few questions from social media.
Oh.
And then we have a question from the audience as well. So first question from social media is, do you feel you have fulfilled your childhood passions?
My childhood passions?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, childhood passions can never be fulfilled. It's like an ongoing childhood wild dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
My passion when I was a child was dancing. So yes, I still fulfill it every day. Turn on the music and...
Our next question is, I feel like we talked about this a bit, so I'm going to go to another question. What would you love to do next?
I think, honestly, if I'm smart, I would take 2 weeks off.
Okay.
Right, Shalon? I think it's time because I have been working nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
I love what I do. And I think especially in this business, it's not just lip service. It cannot be just a job.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be passion. It has to be. And but it's been so intense because doing the Everything Everywhere All at Once was a very special movie. And we knew it. But we also knew, like when we did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon,
mm-hmm.
we knew it was special. But how do we get it out to the people? So I told the Daniels, when we did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, mm-hmm. Ang Lee and whatever, and us, we would go to the universities. We would go and talk to the people. We would, you know, be there at the screening so it would attract more attention. And because, you know, when you are an indie film, you don't have the money to do the big posters, you know, see it on the magazines all the time. It's how you get out there. And at that time, we didn't even have social media, not like now. So luckily, the Daniels are geniuses at that. So they are like, la, 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 and then we would go out there and talk to whoever would listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately for us also, Everything Everywhere spoke to people
mm-hmm.
on its own. So that was a tremendous bonus mm-hmm. on that side. What was the question again?
What would you like to do next?
What would I? So I would, and because it has been so intense and doing the campaign, for the Oscars, I didn't realize when they said campaign, it is a campaign.
Yes.
With no knowledge of what the return would be
mm-hmm.
of even, maybe not even getting a nomination. Because I remember when I was shooting A Haunting in Venice, Jamie Dornan, he's the most sweetest bloke. And he says, yeah, when we did Belfast, I moved my family for 3 months to Los Angeles. I attended every party. I did Q&A. I did everything. and I didn't get nominated. I was like, thank you, JB. That's really encouraging. So it's like you just have to go through and go with and learn. It was a hard learning experience as well, because you don't know how to deal with it socially, politically, what is the right thing to do or what is not. But fortunately, I had a great publicity team led by Liz and, of course, my team in America, who were always there to catch you when you fall. But I think right now you feel like it's taken its toll, because, and I love it when people come and say, enjoy the moment, enjoy yourself. And you go like, what am I supposed to be enjoying right now? Because you're still like lost in the whole, I don't know, the whole swirling. It's like a little tornado on its own. So, and then I was filming Wicked. And I was running from LA back to London, then to New York and back to London. I think I did that London, LA at least 4 or 5 times, just so that I was working and being there when I needed to be. When I finished with Wicked, the best thing I should do is take 2 weeks off, right? and not take in anything, and just say, okay, I have to turn off my phone and make it a conscious effort to take the time out for yourself and say, I don't want to decide what dress I'm going to wear. Who is going to do this? Who is going to do that? I don't want to have to make those decisions for a while.